Well, let's face it. Regardless of how one looks at it or what spin we care to put on it, the fact still remains. Jesus was being rude. Extremely rude. For reasons known only to himself, he was having a day where he refused to let well enough alone. I mean, here was a man who had been invited to a real gala event. Sabbath dinner at the home of a Pharisee. Now, it wasn't just any Pharisee, mind you. It was the head Pharisee, the leader of the Pharisees. Now, in the ancient world, to get invited to the Pharisee's home was good enough, but if you got invited to the lead Pharisee's home, life didn't get much better than that. Now, in all fairness, if you read the scriptures just before today's reading, they do say that the Pharisee and his other royal guests were watching him carefully. With that being said, however, it was obvious that for at least that day, they had decided to call a truce. You see, as they were walking to the Pharisee's house, a man with dropsy approached Jesus, and Jesus healed him. The Pharisees didn't say a word. So Jesus, he turns to him and he says something to the effect of, well, you take your donkey to the water on Sabbath and this man is just as important as your donkey. It was an argument he had used with him countless other times, and every time he managed to get into an argument. But not this time. The Pharisee and his royal entourage didn't say a word. And so they get to Jesus' house. And they go inside. No arguing. No questioning him. No one saying yes, but. They just go inside. And the dinner begins. That's what makes Jesus' reaction seem so rude. Now, granted, the games that were being played that day were, well, they could get fairly vicious. You see, it was a badge of honor to be chosen to sit next to the Pharisee, and so the guests were all jockeying for a position, but this was something that went on at every dinner party. Jesus had seen it countless times before, and besides that, everyone who was jockeying knew the game. They enjoyed it. It was just the way things were. Jesus looked at them. All these holy people. And it was the Sabbath. A day that was set aside to worship and to fellowship and to model God's kingdom. And here were these holy people jockeying with each other and acting like a group of little kids who all wanted to be first at the party. And so Jesus knew that they were anything but welcoming. And so he knew he had to take a stand. He knew that he had to speak the truth. He somehow or the other had to convince them that in God's kingdom, the real winners were not those who were self-seeking, but self-giving. In God's kingdom, there would be no distinction between the rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots. In God's kingdom, there would no longer be an over and an under relationship. There would be no jockeying for the favorite position, because all positions would be favored. In God's kingdom, everyone would be free to simply love and encourage others as they grew and developed in their faith. And so Jesus spoke up, and he told them a story. And as rude as it sounded, as rude as it was, he was telling them the truth. As the community of believers, we have a better world, a world to offer others. Now, can you imagine living in a world like that, where everyone is accepted for who they are? Can you imagine living in a world where differences, not conformity, is the goal, where diversity is respected? Where people reach out to one another, where forgiveness, not revenge, is the expected reaction. Can you imagine living in a world where the good of the whole is held higher than the will of the individual? Where everyone is respected and welcomed in. That's the world that Jesus was trying to hand those holy people that day. Can you imagine it? Oh. There have been giants in the past century who have imagined it. They've dreamed of such a world. Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr. They all worked for that great and glorious day when, paraphrasing Dr. King, a person would not be judged by the color of their skin. Or their social standing. Or the gender of their birth. But by the content of their character. And while the work of these now very famous individuals was immensely important, it was through the quiet, non-assuming, behind-the-scenes people, those that were acting out of love, those that believed what the giants were saying, they were the ones who actually spread the vision. They were the ones who lived it into a reality. In his book, Rumors of Another World, Philip Yancey recounts the story of what happened in South Africa after Nelson Mandela was released from prison after 28 years. He was not only released from prison, but you will remember that he was elected president of that country. And he did one of the most spectacular things. The day that he was inaugurated, he went to the jailer who had held him captive for 28 long years and invited him to come and stand beside him. And then he went on to appoint Archbishop Desmond Tutu to head the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And the rules of that commission were simple. If a white police officer or army officer voluntarily came to the commission and faced his accuser, confessed of his crime, and fully acknowledged his guilt, he could not be tried or jailed or put to death. So for 2.5 years, the people of South Africa sat and they listened to one horror story after another. All the while, hardliners grumbled about the obvious injustice of letting criminals go unpunished, but both Mandela and Tutu insisted that the country needed more healing than it needed justice. At one hearing, a police officer by the name of Vanderbrook recounted an incident where he and a fellow officer shot an 18-year-old boy to death, and then they burned his body. 8 years later, he returned to the same home, and he sees the boy's father. The man's wife was forced to watch as he and other officers tied the man to a woodpile, doused him with gasoline, and set him on fire. After he confessed of his sins, the courtroom was very quiet as an elderly woman was given the chance to respond. When the judge asked her what she wanted from Mr. Vanderbrook, she said she wanted him to go to the place where he had burned her husband and scrape up the dust so that she could give him the proper burial. Mr. Vanderbrook agreed. And then the woman looked at him and said, "I want one other thing." She said, "Mr. Vanderbrook took all my family away from me. And I still have so much love to give. So twice a month, I want him to come to the ghetto and spend a day with me so I can be a mother to him. And I would like Mr. Vanderbrook to know that he has been forgiven by God and that I forgive him too. And now I would like to embrace him so that he knows my forgiveness is true." As she walked towards the man who had brutally taken her family away from her, with her arms outstretched, those in the courtroom began to sing "Amazing Grace." Can you imagine living in a world ruled by God's grace, guided by God's forgiveness and filled with God's love? Can you imagine it? It is the world that Jesus is calling us to create. The world that Jesus is inviting us to live into reality. Now listen again to the words that Jim read from the book of Hebrews. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels unaware. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison, those who are being tortured as though you yourself is tortured. Be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you alone, nor will I forsake you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can anyone do to me? Oh, friends, just imagine. Imagine living in such a world. Now go. Leave this place and make it so. After all, it is what Christ has asked us to do. To God be the glory. Amen.